Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I don't have to tell you who that is. He's everything. He's it. He's the guy. That is Mitchell Trubisky, and it's all about him. And the Bears are practicing. It is time. Bernstein and McKnight brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. Rich Campbell, you heard him last week in my stead as he co-hosted this show. He is on Twitter at Rich_Campbell, and he is back on the beat with some actual football going on, or at least the simulacrum of the training variety. Rich, how are you?
I'm great. We'll report today, hear from Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, Trubisky. And then you can hit the snooze button till August 2nd when they finally play a game. It'll be a long preseason.
What do you want to know today? What's on the top of your list to actually find out? Because it's rare times when Ryan Pace makes himself this available. What do we have to pin him down on?
It's a good question. It's something I'm going to think about on my drive down. I think we have to get to the business side of things first with Roquan Smith and try to at least ask about his status. I don't think Pace will be forthcoming or share much of what's going on with that impasse. As of last night, we had no indication that he's going to report today. So keeping in mind that this is a week earlier than normal and that the alarm bells get delayed accordingly, that is the first order of business. I'm a little bit more interested to hear from Nagy today than I am Pace, and that's usually not the case. But because it's his first camp, really want to dig in with him about the thought he's put into structuring it, what he really wants to accomplish, how he wants to run it in terms of tone, in terms of pace, tempo, that kind of thing. As far as Ryan goes, it's interesting because if you look at the roster, the position battles here, the roster battles that you might normally have, they don't jump out at you as much. And for a team that has come off four consecutive double-digit loss seasons, I think that's a bit unusual that they have so many fixed parts right now and they're just sort of counting on these guys to ascend.
Rich, I was thinking about exactly that heading into this camp, about how a team that has not performed on the field is static in their construction. So I wonder then if a question toward Nagy or perhaps Pace himself might be something along the lines of will there be competition created here? Are you going to manufacture some of these job battles to a certain degree? Because once you put guys in the blender like that, you're going to see, I think, you should see some people rise. I wonder if there's spots where you can see some of that manufactured to your eye.
Yeah, and they'll always say that competition is apparent, is present, because these guys are working very hard in uncomfortable conditions. So they really want to try to push people at the bottom of the roster, people at the top of the roster, and it does come down to performance. So for as much as we think we know about guys in certain positions, it does get to play out, and ultimately, you know, these coaches, the cliche this time of year is players pick the team, and that's true. Players also pick the starters. You know, these guys don't have things handed to them. If a player like, for example, Deion Bush on the back end, who Vic Fangio mentioned unsolicitedly in the spring as looking good, as playing fast, as being in the right positions, if a guy like him shows out against the second string, then he gets an opportunity. And goodness knows the Bears have enough practices this preseason to rotate guys through the first string, to try different combinations if they feel like there's some type of value in mixing that up. And then I guess it's up to us to look for those pockets of the roster, right, where this might happen. Tight end is going to be interesting. Deion Sims and Adam Shaheen playing that inline blocking tight end spot where Sims is the more experienced player, but Shaheen has the draft pedigree and needs to take a step forward. I mentioned the back end, the safety position, whether maybe someone could unseat Adrian Amos. Eddie Jackson, I think, is fixed in his spot there. The Bears really like what he did a year ago. Offensive line, you know, if you're really digging into the minutia, who's going to play in the left guard spot? So there are a couple things to watch punter is one of them. Dan, I know you love the punting battles.
Stopwatch
out, you know, calculating hang time on everything.
The only reason I like it, going back to my reporting days, is because to be able to work in every single time mentioning somebody having a leg up in the competition.
That was
mandatory that had to be done. But and forgive me if this is a stupid question, but I've been trying to think about the effect of the new kickoff rule, because the more I've read about it, the more I've heard referees, former referees, there's a lot of former referees right now are talking about it because of the change over there, but how serious and significant that rule change is. How does that affect special teams roster selection? Because a lot of these decisions around the margins, do you keep an extra linebacker, do you keep an extra defensive back or an extra running back, are based on certain responsibilities on special teams. If there is more speed and quickness and less mass and collision going on, is your roster construction for special teams going to start to change?
Are you talking about the component of the rule that eliminates the 5-yard run-up?
That's part of it. But in general, the idea of the premium being placed much more on speed and quickness than it's going to be on bulk and smashing guys now, because they're going to make it much more like punt coverage, much more having to run back to run forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that probably isn't clear at this point. We'll have to see. That the Bears are in an interesting spot with the linebackers in that part of the equation, guys who have been on the team for the last few years as sort of run and hit guys on kick coverage, the Jonathan Anderson, the John Timu, those two guys in particular, who I think they've played too much on defense because of injuries, but in terms of their special teams roles, those guys are out of practice squad eligibility. And so the Bears will have decisions to make there after losing Christian Jones to the Lions. And one thing that was a focus for the front office during the draft was finding linebackers who can run on special teams. And part of this is a function of the 3-4 defense. It's the type of linebacker you have. It's, you know, half your linebacker position is devoted to that outside backer spot, which doesn't lend itself to special teams. So you're really only working with that inside spot. And they did draft Joel Iebuniwe to sort of take that role and go with it. But even just consider his body type. He's a little bit more slight of frame, 230, 240. Maybe that's the type of player that excels now on special teams. And there probably are openings for undrafted players to at least make a name for themselves as run and hit guys, sort of hang on the practice squad like Anderson and Timu have done the last couple years.
You didn't get to my guy who is on my list for preseason star that everybody starts to talk about, or the guy who gets mentioned at the back of your notes package because he flashed in a couple of drills. And that is a guy, Isaiah Irving, who every once in a while last year you see and you have to look at what you don't know the number, and then you say, oh, who's that guy? Or you hear Sam Rosen mention his name, or now it's Adam Amin mentioned
or some name.
Right, but right, or some name, even though it is Isaiah Irving. But I think that could be one of these training camp stars or exhibition game stars this year who might just have the game slow down enough for him that against twos and threes might show out a little bit.
And I think that was the case for him last year. I completely agree with you that you did notice him with some sack production and being in the backfield a little bit from that outside linebacker spot. And if you're a player like him, an undrafted guy, a guy with no draft pedigree, that's a really good position to be playing for this particular team right now. There are going to be opportunities. If you can rush the passer, you certainly have a great chance to make the team and also stop the run. Kylie Fitz is a outside backer they like as a run stopper, so maybe they're going to lean more towards the pass rush production, and rightfully so, given the questions at that position. But I'm with you. Irving has flashed in the past, and he got some rotational time last year when injuries started to mount. Nothing extended enough to really count on him. But, yeah, when the starters check out and you change your mindset to look for guys who are flashing to maybe grab a foothold, I agree with you that he is one of those guys. Showed some speed and disruptive ability.
Rich, you and I talked a lot last week about how it almost feels like there's going to be two different mindsets, one on the offense and one on the defensive side. Offense is about installation and learning and generating, you know, an identity, whereas defense, it's Vic Fangio doing what he's done for a while with a lot of guys who have been there for some time. I think about Eddie Goldman and the way that Vic Fangio kind of called him to the floor, saying this would be a good time for him to step up. This is a year for him to step up. You mentioned how Fangio has called out Deion Bush and said, hey, this is a guy who could flash. Is this a little bit like Vic flexing some head coach muscles? Like, he gets to a certain degree, kind of call guys out and in a good way, you know, ask for more and demand that defense itself step up from the guys that have been there a while.
That's probably fair. Vic is always known as a straight shooter, and even reading back through some of his comments when he first got here in 2015, that he wasn't afraid to call guys by name, even if the context was needing more out of their performance. And now that he's as established here as he is, having been here 3 years, having ascended the defense to a top 10 group, that he does have that clout. He does have that voice and that impact and the respect from the players. And Prince Mukamara said this back in the spring, that he thought Vic would be sort of an in-your-face, you know, MF guy, really trying to use that type of hard coaching to get the most out of his players. And then Prince realized that combined with that is a funny guy, a really smart guy, a guy who cares about his players. And Vic has, throughout his career, struck that right balance, at least with his defenses. Maybe not in head coach interviews when he's had the chance to do that, but with his defenses, yes. And back in the spring when we asked Vic, we're going through all the rookie draft picks, the day three guys that they picked, and even Roquan Smith, Vic sort of put a stop to that and said, look, I know you guys are interested about the draft picks. Those are the sexy new names, but really we have to get the guys – we're coming back better, and that's really the key for them to improve. So that said, yeah, he is going to push a guy like Eddie Goldman, who's setting up to have a hugely important camp. Maybe there's a contract extension waiting for him at the end of it. And you could go on down the list, whether it's Prince Mukamara not having an interception in the league since 2015, Leonard Floyd even just staying on the field and trying to make up for lost time at the end of last season. And I think we will see Vic, just even from Nagy's deference to him, as leaving the defense to his coordinator, that Vic can even have a louder, stronger voice.
Do you think that Matt Nagy, as careful and as methodical as he is, can do any simulated head coaching practice as far as challenging, as far as clock management, score and situation, you know, stuff that he hasn't done before? I wonder if he could do, I mean, with all the virtual reality they have for the quarterbacks, isn't there something to be said for saying, all right, here you go, here's a situation, do you take a timeout, do you stop the clock, how many running plays can you run to conserve X amount of time? Do you know if he's trying to simulate any of that, having not done it?
So I asked him this very question at the end of the spring, just because I think you can do this on the field. You get 11 on 11, and it's not live tackling, but you've got officials there. You've got scoreboard and clock there, and they do this all the time, practicing end-of-half situations mostly, end-of-game situations, red zone situations. It is about situational football, and I'm with you. A big part of this is not just how Mitch Trubisky runs the two-minute. It's how Matt Nagy manages the two-minute
right.
clock. In terms of timeouts and getting to the line of scrimmage, whether they want to run a play, whether they want to spike the ball. And that's going to be really important for us to continue to stay on Nagy about, both asking him and watching him how they conduct practice. You'll often see in these practices, the coordinator will have a walkie-talkie. It's been Dow Loggins. It's been Adam Gase. It's been Mark Trestman. And the walkie-talkie is live into the quarterback's helmet. And so they are running these with as much game simulation as possible. It's not quite the same. You don't have the pressure. But in the spring, back when I asked Nagy about this, he said that what they've done so far is a lot of classroom work on this, watching games and talking specifically with the quarterbacks. Okay, here's this situation. All right, you see that the team, whatever game they're watching, is getting to the line of, what are we doing here? And they're trying to speak it out with a level of urgency that would be, you know, applied in the game, but they are going to have to do that on the field, and I think they will with some 11-on-11 drill work.
Rich, I know somebody will ask the question, whether it's of Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, or both. I just wonder what your expectations are. It's kind of a, I don't know, note-keeping kind of thing. What are the expectations for Allen Robinson in his beginning of camp and his, you know, being healthy and around, just to double-check?
I think the expectation is that he's full go, and he released a video on his Twitter account yesterday that has talked about how the last 10 months have been in one of the biggest blessings of his life, and it was this sort of hype video with montage of his rehab. He's running in the pool. He's running routes with the Jaguars trainers. He's running routes on the Bears practice field. You put out that video, you're making a statement that you better be ready to go and you better be ready to maintain. I assume that a lot of these players coming off major off-season injuries or injuries from last season will have days off sprinkled in. That only makes sense. It's typical, and with a long preseason, that's how this is. So with Robinson, we'll obviously keep tabs on that, but you released that video like he did yesterday, and you're saying, I'm on the field day one, I'm also on the field days two, three, four, and it'll be really, really fun to see how he looks and how he can develop a rapport with Trubisky.
Rich, thanks a lot. I know we'll be hearing a lot from you as camp rolls on. So congrats on another year, and let's get it started.
Thanks, fellas.
That is Rich Campbell, brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. We have an MLB transaction.
News.
We got some news beyond the now finalized Manny Machado trade. We have an AL Central team girding for the playoffs. We will get to that and give you all the details in a moment on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Brad Hand is on the move. He joins Cleveland, according to Ken Rosenthal, now confirmed by John Heyman, the much sought after bullpen arm. Goes to Cleveland in exchange for...
Not just Brad Hand, but Adam Simber is going as well. So the Indians are picking up two relievers, both of them with a plenty amount of team control. Brad Hand signed through 2021, if memory serves, and Simber is a rookie. Jason Stark pointed it out, and I mentioned to you, we were looking at the FIPs for a lot of Indians relievers. That has been... Pitching has been... They're bugaboo, really, all season long. Jason Stark pointed out they have the highest bullpen ERA outside of the Royals this season. The Indians, who have struggled with Andrew Miller in and out. They've struggled with Cody Allen at closer. And with the control that's attached to these pitchers, Hand being, expensive, but under team control for a while, I'm wondering if a guy like Francisco Mejia isn't in this deal. A top prospect level dude.
It is Mejia.
Really? That's reported? We've got that done? Listen, those prices are... That is a non-zero amount of prospect to move. I don't know what else is going to be in it. I wonder if it's more than Mejia, but that's a dude. Well, that's a dude.
I guess you figure the Indians, where they are in their window, right now they've been gifted this division.
Oh, it's wrapped. It's done.
It's over. And they'll be able to back in to a real playoff spot, stay out of any coin flip game. Why not? This is the time to do it. Why hang on to a prospect if you're going to have a divisional championship?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that, especially as the Indians are constructed pitching-wise. There's, Corey Kluber's 32, and he might be a robot, but he remains 32 years old. You've gotten a up-and-down kind of work from Carlos Carrasco over the last few years, though he's been pretty good this season, 31 years old. Mike Clevinger has given you a ton of solid innings as a kind of out-of-nowhere 27-year-old. We mentioned before this season started, or at least I did, that I kind of eyed up that Indians team as, they'll walk through the division and they should be fine. Look at the talent that Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez offer you up the middle or on the left side, depending on when you're playing Ramirez on a given day, I guess, if Kipnis is or isn't. But that pitching, it was a little head-scratchy to me. You had gone to Andrew Miller a lot, and you're asking so much from some of those guys. They had lost a number of good pitchers as well out of the back end of that bullpen to help supplement Allen and to help, fix up what you had with Miller. This is a needed trade, and you're right. This is the quick way to fix that Indians team.
Bernstein and McKnight brought to you in part by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Music City Bowl champs host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. So Simber was in the game on Sunday.
That was right.
For a while it was Simber who was the man without a first name.
I'm sure he has a first name.
Right.
Don't know what it is.
Simber does have a first name.
Mm-hmm. and he found it eventually.
It's OSCAR.
No, it's Adam. It's Adam though, and he realized it. But that's it's good on Pat for talking his way into it as he's going through his notes.
MLB Pipeline, and they've not updated. I know a lot of people have updated. Baseball America just updated their top 50, and Baseball Prospectus updated the midseason top 50 prospects last week, but didn't put draft guys in. So Nick Madrigal wasn't in a White Sox top list, but Francisco Mejia on Pipeline is the 15th ranked prospect in baseball. Francisco Mejia is the guy who had the 58 game hitting streak in the minor leagues 2 years ago. He got called up to play postseason ball for the Indians. Catcher, maybe an outfielder. He's one of those, you know, kind of new age athletic Jason Kendall type catchers. Guys who can move around a lot. Not like your Sal Fasano. You know, it's a different kind of different kind of dude.
My guy Salvatore caught the final out of the Glendon Rush no hitter.
Now, did he have the mustache then, or was he still working on would later be a wonderful mustache?
No, Sal was clean shaven when he played for Rockford. He did have a fabulous mullet, though.
Really?
I mean, a resplendent, thick.
We're talking early 90s, right? Early 90s? Mid-90s?
Mid-90s.
Quite American Gladiators type mullet, but or A.C. Slater type mullet.
94. No, but it wasn't.
This is more feathered than greasy then,
No,
huh?
No. Curly hair. I mean, I mean, Sal was one of these guys where, like, he had to shave every 5 minutes. I mean, that guy could grow a beard. It's like, you want to grow a beard? Give me a second. Like Bryce Harper's dad kind of thing, right? The woolly, willy kind of stuff.
Flexed it out of
him. He was really, really good and able. I mean, he was a good player. He had a nice career.
Yeah.
And we were lousy with catchers, man, because on that particular team, it was Salvatore, it was Mike Sweeney. There's another guy named Carlos Mendez who could catch also. And they were all just mashing the ball.
Sal hasn't played big league ball since 2008. He finished his career in Cleveland. But Baseball Reference has him at, and check me if I'm wrong here, Dan, 6'2", 220.
Okay. Maybe a little shorter.
That's generous. Sal was toward the end.
See, I remember I knew him as a minor leaguer, and that's
mid-90s.
Yeah, when he came in, that's right. Hoffman Estates, right? I think so. I think he's from here.
Yeah, Hoffman Estates. Went to the University of Evansville in Sal Fasano.
Yeah, I wonder what he's doing, but could he mash in the minor leagues? And it wasn't he played for a while.
Yeah, he had himself a good career, 1996 to 2008. Made himself some money. There's a couple of texts in about this trade, the Indians picking up two decent relievers in Adam Simber and Brad Hand. And it looks like do we know that it's just Francisco Mejia? I keep checking it.
Yeah,
it is. Mejia.
Yeah, Simber and Hand for Mejia.
That is a significant price, and this from the 815. It's a worthwhile price to pay, in my opinion, if you're the Indians. But the 815 here is putting up that I believe the Cubs have no one listed in the top, and that is correct. Going into this season, and even with a couple of updates,
Alzolay wasn't on there?
Alzolay was, he might have been a top 100 guy, but even still, he's only now just hoping to. You see, he posted on his Twitter feed, Alzolay did. He's looking forward to getting back to pitching and throwing off a mound.
Can't say I follow Adbert Alzolay.
Yeah, I'm a nerd, so I follow minor league prospects sometimes. Although maybe it got retweeted by somebody,
too.
Trying to hedge my bet.
Cool.
I follow him. Still.
Nerd!
Still. That makes it one and one back end top 100 guy. So if those are prices, and granted those are two relievers, and again, worth mentioning the amount of control that's on Brad Hand's deal up until 2021 and Simber being a rookie, that's 6 years. That's a lot of control for both of those guys.
So I guess your point being, for anybody clamoring, why didn't the Cubs get him?
Look at the price you're paying.
It took more than they had.
Yeah, top 15 guy. A top 15 prospect who can play right now, by the way, Francisco Mejia, probably ready to roll.
We mentioned yesterday and spent a lot of time talking about the battle between Rob Manfred and Mike Trout, and oddly how he calls out his star. Did you see what the Angels released, the statement that the Angels released?
Another thing I retweeted, actually. Yes,
yeah,
it's beautiful.
I don't think we were able to get to it, but this is, you talk about an organization standing up, throwing direct shade at the commissioner of baseball in an effort to prop up their guy.
You notice, too, Trout cleared it. He's like, I'm good. We're fine. Don't level me with stuff about the commissioner. Don't come. He and I are fine.
Right. Here's what Trout said. Trout said, I've received lots of questions about Commissioner Manfred's recent statement. I'm not a petty guy and would really encourage everyone to just move forward. Everything's cool between the commissioner and myself. End of story. I'm ready to just play some baseball. That's all he said.
It's Mike Trout
That's classic Mike Trout. But the Angels didn't stop there. The Angels had a response to the commissioner saying, well, you know, player's got to market itself. He didn't do anything to help himself. He can't expect me to do all this.
So you're saying Trout cools things and the Angels go, hold my beer?
The Angels wrote, on behalf of the Angels organization and baseball fans everywhere, congratulations to Mike Trout on another outstanding All-Star Game performance. Mike Trout is an exceptional ambassador for the game. Combined with his talent, his solid character creates a perfect role model for young people everywhere. Each year, Mike devotes a tremendous amount of his time and effort contributing to our organization and marketing Major League Baseball. He continually chooses to participate in the community, visiting hospitals, schools, and countless other charities. One of Mike's traits that people admire most is his humility. His brand is built upon generously spending his time engaging with fans both at home and on the road while remaining a remarkable baseball player and teammate. In addition, Mike spends quality time as a husband, son, brother, uncle, and friend. We applaud him for prioritizing his personal values over commercial self-promotion. That is rare in today's society and stands out as much as his extraordinary talent.
That's strong.
Commissioner.
That is strong.
Mm-hmm.
From an organization too that has done well, I guess it's one thing to make the statement like that and then conflate it with some of the contracts, some of the spending decisions they've made to try and win now and to try and get maybe overreach just a little bit financially. Still though, you like to see organizations back players like that. I mean, we've been dealing with stories over the last 2 or 3 days where not necessarily in baseball, but organizations have said words like loyalty and not meant anything by them. You know, in this case of the Toronto Raptors moving DeMar DeRozan after telling them that he's not going anywhere. And you saw a bunch of stories from different ball players, different NBA players about how their teams had said, we're not moving you. It's not, you're not happening. You're staying right here. Buy a house. Raise the kids. Put them in a school. And then they're traded the next day. I wouldn't necessarily equate that with the statement from the Angels, but it brings to mind what organizations can do for players if they so choose to put their arm behind it.
This segment's brought to you by Dell. Dell Small Business Technology Advisors know there's nothing small about your business. They provide one-on-one partnership and reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL. The big trade has happened. Another trade that might not have looked so big, but we actually look at it. We're talking about multi-year control of two relief pitchers for a top prospect in the organization in this trade of Mejia for Hand and Simber. So Cleveland is fortifying themselves, to use the word that Theo Epstein used yesterday with the Scores Morning Show. I wonder what that does overall to the market. If once some of these things start to happen, if teams begin to act so as to not lose out on whatever resources might be available next.
I was reading around, you know, Zach Britton's name, and Bruce Levine has a tweet out, a report out, that the Cubs are expected to check in on Zach Britton, you know, the Orioles closer, and see exactly what's left there. I would imagine medicals are a huge factor there, because coming back from an injury like that, an Achilles like that, there are questions, some fair questions about how long he can remain healthy, what kind of pitcher he is at this point as well. But you also, taking a look at the price paid by the Indians here, a top 15 guy in Francisco Mejia, a guy who they could have controlled for another 5 years, a guy who extends their window offensively. Just because you're having a bad bullpen season now doesn't mean, we talk about the volatility of relievers all the time, doesn't mean that some of those guys won't bounce back. Now, age is obviously an issue, especially with Miller and usage and whatnot, but the rest of them, you got more bodies in that bullpen. If the price paid there is is untenable from the Cubs' standpoint because of a lack of prospects or an unwillingness to maybe deal from your major league roster just to grab a bullpen piece and make Joe Maddon a little bit more versatile later in the innings, which is understandable, then maybe that's where the sense comes in with Zach Britton. Maybe you're able to get a discount because the medicals on this guy might be the ability for him to pitch later on might be a little iffy, and maybe that's where you get your price break.
Special thanks to our Bank of America partner, Maui Jim. Maui Jim sunglasses were born on the beaches of Hawaii, designed to respond to the bright sun and harsh glare of the islands with polarized +2 lens technology. MauiJim.com. The view's better from here. When we return from a brief timeout, we've got the first of your three chances to win $1,000 in cash on the score. I will give you the keyword to text in just a moment. And also, we have the full sound of North Carolina head coach Larry Fedora
yes.
at the ACC Media Days. And he goes coachy places where only the coachiest coaches dare to coach.
It's one thing to talk about a guy stepping in it. It's another to watch it happen.
But just to – football coaches are just damn weird, and when one of your best friends is Tim Beckman, you understand like these guys probably get together and just like say weird football stuff together.
Their football coaches are believers. They're true believers, for better or for worse.
In everything.
They're true believers in whatever it is that they're telling you about. They believe it in their heart.
Well, Larry believes some things that are kind of weird, but we'll hear. We got to hear his words. We read his words yesterday, and we get to hear him next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oh, indeed. And God has blessed football. The divine blessing of the game that is making this nation what it is. The Bernstein and McKnight Show. Guess what it's time for?
I want it.
You can't have it. You're not eligible because it's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash.
Oh, I thought it was time to listen to Larry Fedora.
It is, but first,
this
I
is
have
better.
This. Yes. This hour's keyword is direct. Text direct to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is direct to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Two more chances at $1,000 between now and 1 o'clock. Just to let you know, we do have the Midday Midway coming up at 11. We have Samantha Pell at 11:40 and a very interesting football topic. And then at noon, we are going to go live to Bourbonnais for the Chicago Bears press conference. We're going to hear from Ryan Pace and find out what's all going on there. We also had Larry Fedora, the head coach of North Carolina Tar Heels football at ACC Media Days yesterday.
The game is better than it's ever been, and I believe the game's under attack right now. I really do. And if we're not careful, you know, we're going to lose what the game is all about.
Who do you think is, to use your word, attacking the game?
Blaming us?
No, I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming anybody. I blame a groundswell of data that is tweaked one way or the other, because I can take the data and I can make it look one way. You can take the data and make it look another way. And whoever's presenting it is the one that gets to say so. And, are there some things that are negative about the game? Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But again, I think as you look over time, I can tell you just in my lifetime, from when I played the game early on to where we are today, here's a huge difference in the way the game is played and the way athletes are taken care of.
You say the game's under attack. Is there anything you fear might happen?
Oh, yes. I fear that the game will get pushed so far to one extreme that you won't recognize the game 10 years from now. That's what I worry about. And I do believe that if it gets to that point, that our country goes down too.
What's the one kind of, I guess, primal, what's the one thing that cannot go away in your mind? Is it, you know, you're worried about losing contact as an element of the game?
Well, if we go to touch football, the game's definitely changed, you know, and the game will not be as physical. The game will not be as tough as it is, you know. A few years back, I had an opportunity to ask a three-star general, you know, what I had a question for him. I said, what is it that makes our country, our military, superior to every other military in the world? And he was like, that's easy. We're the only football-playing nation in the world. You know, and he said, most of all of our troops have grown up, have played the game at some point in their life, at some level. And the lessons that they learn from that game is what makes us who we are.
How is it different than rugby?
I don't know rugby, so I couldn't tell you that. I just know they don't wear a helmet. So, but I don't... I apologize. I just don't know the game.
If football were to go to one super extreme, how would it change America? How would that?
I think, I don't know the real answer to that. I just think that I think we will lose a lot as a nation. I think we'll lose a lot because I think what the game teaches, I think we'll lose so much of that. I really do. And you know, again, I think that's one of the things that makes us such a great nation.
I mean, you can't
go Bears!
You can't write this stuff, man.
What?
That's a football coach.
I mean,
that's a college. You're 3-9 last year, tough guy. With 37 players hurt.
How is it different than rugby?
I don't know rugby, so I couldn't tell you that. I just know they don't wear helmets.
He didn't have answer. First of all, he had
I don't know the real answer to that
who's
question.
Attacking the game? I don't know.
That wasn't an I don't know. That was who's attacking the game. And he stopped himself, at least I think. He stopped himself from going, all of you with recorders, because you're the enemy. All of you writing about the 37 people that I lost in all last season.
Writing
all the
about
games
my
that I 3-9 lost.
3-9 record.
Why won't you help recruit for North Carolina?
Oh, my God.
That's what he wanted
to
say.
That's Tim Beckman's buddy right there.
My word. The
country gets to that point that our country goes down too.
The country goes down.
It's like he's writing a young
spoiler
adult
alert.
Dystopian fiction novel.
Yeah, right. The country goes down because and I'm with him about not changing football. I'm totally with him on that. I don't want them to change the game. I don't want football to be safe.
I want this press conference to be turned into the lyrics to the next Lee Greenwood song. I want that transposed into song Lee.
Well, Danny Mac will do it for us. He'll put it together. That is so special. That is so – that's
really
just,
something.
They think these things. They think when football coaches get together in their coaching shorts and their coaching places and they stand at the bar and they reminisce about their days of running into things, they think these things. And that's the kind of stuff they talk about. Oh, we're under attack. Oh, we're under attack. We got to get to our silo and get to our bunker because football's going to be changed. The country's going to go down. And did anybody ask him to name the three-star general he talked to?
No. I don't think they did.
That's your first. If you're
the insurance guy,
if you're a reporter, it's your first question.
What general?
Which general? Where? Where did you speak to this guy? Who are you talking about? He didn't speak to any general. And
Patton living his next life.
That is completely made up. No three-star general. Like, hey, want to know why the U.S. military is superior? Football. That's why.
Because at some point, everyone in the military has played football at some level.
Every single person.
As long as you're strapped up for like a Pop Warner game at age 7, you're magically imbued with the toughness that football brings you.
Correct.
And suitable for the American military, which outspends the next 26 militaries by country.
Has nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with spending
or technology.
Or training. Or nothing like that. Or population
size. So getting turned
size.
Away from the military has nothing to do with health risks or anything like that. It's just, have you played football?
Exactly.
That's right.
There's one question. Mm-hmm. You go to the recruiting station, wherever you go. If you didn't play football.
Two questions. Did you play football? How are your feet? You got the flat feet? Well, then you got to go sit out in Vietnam.
Right.
You can't do it.
Horrible case of hemorrhoids.
Don't worry about it.
You know, whatever it might be. You got the peptic
as
ulcers.
As many deferments as you want. Just take them.
Yeah. That's
members of the peptic ulcers.
That is so great. I would imagine right now that somebody in the Israeli Air Force hears this, like, well, I guess we got to start playing football, and we're not going to be effective anymore.
This
we're
from the 708.
Do our jobs.
I was in the Army, and maybe 5 out of my 25 person platoon in Afghanistan played football, and we were in the infantry. Capitalized, he or she capitalized infantry, just to drive it home. That's great. It's a good test.
Then maybe you just weren't great then.
It's a great test.
Then maybe you weren't great at infantry. Had you played football, maybe you would have been better at infantry-ing. Because that's what makes this military and this country. Because, of course, the military is the country. Therefore, they're one and the same.
Yes.
But the made-up three-star general said, hey, by the way, coach, I know your team was 3-9, but forget that.
I'm going to bet that 25-person platoon did just fine with only 5 of them playing football. I'm sure they were fine.
And that's actually why we lost Vietnam.
Not enough football players.
Correct. Yeah. That the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, they secretly were holding two-a-days. And while they were also digging the tunnels at Kuchi.
Scrimmages.
It was like the longest yard. They didn't have all the equipment they needed, but the hard scrabble guerrilla fighters were able to learn the game well enough to defeat us.
Right. I think I mentioned it yesterday. I'm reading the Hamilton biography, and that's what Washington had everybody doing at Valley Forge.
Yep.
That's how they got out of that winter is just, you know, a couple of 6-game seasons of football, just running through that. That's how they made it.
So Ramblin' Grimace made a good point on Twitter, shockingly enough, that you know it's college football when none of the reporters were laughing.
There was one laugh. No,
somebody
there was.
Laughed.
There was once, if we could play it back, right in the middle, but only one. It was right in the middle because some reporter had a follow-up to As he's stepping in, the country is going down. And by the way, it's all – but this reporter was already asking a follow-up, and you hear someone in the background just go, what?
This is from Glenn, who says, that three-star general is right. Who can forget the way we triumphed over the Imperial Japanese Navy at Midway because of their failure to contemplate the zone blitz? And George Halas did more than thrill the nation with his T formation. It was also key to the 82nd Airborne's defensive bastone. Outstanding.
Does this country exist without 65 toss power trap?
Hell I don't no. Think so. Absolutely Hell not. No.
Absolutely not.
Student body left the sweep, the Lombardi sweep. That helped the North win the Civil War. Are you kidding?
This from the – okay, we have our first Larry Fedora supporter. Dan and Connor, don't you get what that coach is trying to say? I'm sure you get his meaning. He's a little far out there about football.
A little.
A little. God forbid what happens. You get far out there. But it's any team sport. You learn to be a team player and everything that goes along with being on a team. I know
– he's not saying any team
he's
sport.
He's not. He's not.
This is the football thing. They don't understand that there's no exceptionalism because they've been so bathed in football exceptionalism and its life lessons. Oh, this is the only way you build toughness. Knock me down, teach me to get back up because I was in the trenches playing
learn those
football.
A lot of places.
Yeah, through a lot of different things. A
lot of places.
A lot of different sports, a lot of things other than sports, a lot of ways to learn a lot of life lessons that can bring out all different kinds of toughness that don't involve smashing your head into things.
Really good question from the 773. What position did Oppenheimer play again? Free safety?
Free safety.
Yeah, okay.
He was like Chuck Cecil.
Running around the Manhattan Project.
Oh, yeah. And members of the Manhattan Project.
You're welcome.
Oh, wait. Is it Manhattan Transfer or Manhattan Transfer? All right.
Probably.
Yeah.
Which one's the orchestra? Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Trans-Siberian
That's different.
Orchestra. Well, very tough, though.
Very tough.
Also played a lot of football.
All football players, yeah.
Yeah, Manhattan Transfer is sort of like an a cappella jazzy thing. They had a couple of crossover hits.
Trans-Siberian Orchestra, great in the trenches.
They had to be. I mean, that's
land war in Russia? That is a tough thing to do in the winter.
That's a heavy metal orchestration, right?
All I know is that they do the Christmas music.
I thought that was Mannheim Steamroller.
Oh, is that that?
Are they the same thing?
I don't.
Does it matter?
No, that's no.
It does
TSO.
Matter. Damn it!
TSO does the
Trans-Siberian Orchestra
rock.
Is classical metal,
right?
Hard, and
they,
hard rock.
They've got a couple of Christmas tunes.
All the Christmas tunes.
All of the Christmas tunes.
And then how are they different from Mannheim Steamroller?
I don't know. Mannheim.
Right, figure this
all
out.
This is so not worth a Google search, and yet here I am.
We have the Midday Midway coming up, and I've got the start of a major sporting event that I have attended in person that features tremendous athleticism. It has at times been televised, and I'm not sure if you're going to be watching, but I was recently at the stadium where it is held, and it's something that it may merit a bit of your attention.
There was a fantastic piece written about something that happened at last night's ESPYs. I did not watch them, but I have read the piece, and it's going to come with my highest recommendation. I will also lay down my sword that I've been holding up for the entirety of this show. Plus, Nick Saban has spoken at SEC Media Days. And if you thought the Larry Fedora stuff was fun, wait till you get Nick Saban.
Also have this question to you. Do you think sports, being a sports fan, on balance, makes you happier or less happy? Because it's been studied. We actually have data to determine whether or not, on balance, your sports fandom makes you a happier person or a less happy
person. Well, you can just twist that data any way you want.
Well, they got a groundswell of people out there ruining our
game. A few years back, I had an opportunity to ask a three-star general.
No, you didn't. A three-star general you made up.
Anything. You got to ask him anything.
Ask him anything.
It was a Reddit AMA, and Fedora was just typing in questions.
What makes America great? Football. I knew it! I knew football made us tougher and better and win wars.
The Midday Midway is next. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.